Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Judith Lerner and her children, Dakota and Corey. Here's a quick summary of who this family is. Judith and her partner Rhonda each birthed a child from the same donor and set precedent of the same-sex cross-adoption in Del Norte County, California, and successfully co-parented after separating when the kids were 6 and 3. Fast forward years later, Rhonda walked Corey down the aisle and Judith officiated the wedding. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you. This is Judith. I'm so glad to be here.
Hi there. This is Corey.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And that was Dakota. All right, everybody. So you're welcome. And yes, welcome to Living Proof. We have many questions for you about you and your family and with each other and with the bigger world. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise unafraid.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of December 3rd, 2013. A Cairo court on Sunday released 17 people arrested last month during a crackdown by authorities on homosexuality. They had been charged with practicing homosexuality and inciting debauchery and were sentenced to 3 years in prison in order to pay a fine of 5,000 Egyptian pounds. The defendants have been given leave to appeal against the sentence to a higher court. Although homosexuality is not specifically outlawed in Egypt, it is a conservative society and discrimination is rife. Gay men are frequently arrested and typically charged with debauchery, immorality, or blasphemy. In October, Egyptian security forces arrested 57 people in a wave of arrests triggered by the raising of the rainbow flag at a music concert. The overwhelming majority of those arrested were not involved in the flag incident. However, they were arrested over their perceived sexual orientation in the following days. And in Australia, marriage equality is one step closer. Earlier this month, more than 61.6% of those who voted on the advisory measure supported marriage equality. Now it's up to the country's legislature to make it happen. And this week, the federal parliament passed a marriage equality bill by a vote of 43-12. The bill will now go on to the House of Representatives, where it's expected to pass easily, making marriage equality a reality before Christmas. In her third reading speech before the final vote, the Labor leader of the Senate, Penny Wong, said Australians had voted in the postal survey to reject discrimination, not to extend it. She added that marriage equality sent a message to LGBTQI people that your love is not lesser, nor are you. It says you are one of us. And in Canada, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau formally apologized to the nation's LGBT citizens for past acts of discrimination. The government has earmarked more than $100 million to compensate members of the military and other federal agencies whose careers were sidelined or ended due to their sexual orientation. The money will be paid out as part of a class action lawsuit settlement to employees who were investigated, sanctioned, and sometimes fired as part of the so-called gay purge, similar to the one that happened here in the United States in the 1950s. The apology has surpassed what any other country has done to make amends to LGBTQ people. Among apology-related initiatives include the government putting $250,000 towards community projects to combat homophobia and provide support for people in crisis. And here locally, Santa Rosa Gaydar invites you to a holiday bingo party hosted by the Grayton Resort and Casino, benefiting the UnDocu Fund for fire relief in Sonoma County. This is a fund that supports undocumented persons who suffered losses during the recent wildfires and who are not eligible for funds from state or federal resources. This event takes place on Sunday, December 10th from 1 to 5 p.m. inside the event center at the Grayton Resort and Casino. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
I like the waves will rise up in spite of the ache will rise up and we'll do it a thousand times again.
And welcome back. If you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan, and I'm Sheridan. And we have Judith Lerner and her children, Dakota and Corey, in studio tonight. So welcome back, everybody. We wanted to start with you kids, well, you young adults, you adults. Dakota, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm 25 years old. I grew up in Sonoma County my whole life. Right now I'm working at a winery out in Napa.
Thank you, Dakota. Corey, what about you? What can you tell us about yourself?
Hi there. I'm Corey, and I'm 28. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I work with adults to help them overcome mental illness. I love my family. It's probably the most important thing to me in my life, and I'm just so happy to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Judith, hello. Welcome. Hi. And can you tell us just a little bit about yourself as well?
Let's see. I'm more than 20. I'm over the speed limit. And let's see. I am many things. I'm a business coach. I'm a musician. I play an instrument called the handpan. I lead Magic of Music workshops. And I'm a quilt artist. And having these young people in my life has made the biggest difference of anything.
Mm. Wow, that's nice.
I mean, how so?
Yeah, I want to know more.
How have your kids made the biggest difference in your life?
Tell us more.
Well, let's see. So for one thing, I was pretty resistant to kids. At one point I was thinking I would have a stand-up routine and part of it would be, so let me get this straight. You bring this being into your life. You know nothing about them at all. You don't know their gender. You don't know their character. You don't know anything about them. You're going to love them more than anything or anyone you've ever loved in your life. And if you do your job right, they're going to leave you. Wow. And my thought was, oh, yeah, right. Sign me up for that.
Wow.
However, in retrospect, having them and the places I've gone and the lessons I've learned, well, just having them and living with them and being with them has so much taken me out of myself, including at some point a while back having this thought of, okay, wait a second, I know how to unconditionally love. I know this because that's how I am with my with Corey and Dakota. What if, just for the sake of, I don't know, experiment, I turned that around to myself? And what would that, you know I can do it. And that was huge too.
When did you have that thought?
I think 5 or 6 years ago.
That's huge.
Yeah, I was doing some counseling, and the whole thing about, oh, love your inner child was like.
she just put her finger in her mouth and started gagging, for those of you who are not in studio.
Yeah, like, gag me with a pitchfork. It just was so, like, I couldn't quite see it. And yet when I had that thought about, oh, what if I approached the different aspects of myself as if they were characters and I was the unconditionally humorous, loving mother or parental unit to them that I know I am to my kids.
What a great lesson.
I know, yeah, really.
It almost seems like you could write a book about that, like a children's illustrated book for adults or something.
I thought about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, think some more, because I've never heard a parent talk like that before about the lessons they can learn from their kids about their own self-love. I think it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank
you. Corey and Dakota, what teachers you are.
I know. We do our best.
Wow.
So let's go back a little bit, Judith, about when you made the decision to say, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to have a child.
Okay. So from the moment that I met Rhonda, who I co-parent with, Like the first time we went out, she said, oh, you would look so beautiful pregnant. I crossed my fingers and was like, whoa, back. And she kept saying for years, you know, have a baby. And about 2 or 3 years in, I said, you know, we're in a really unique situation here because it's not that I'm going anywhere. I just can't quite, you know, get myself to see having a child. But, you know, if you want a baby, you could have one. So she said, okay. And
so she was first.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. And she had Corey. And then a few years later, she was saying, okay, your turn. And I said, okay, I will give it 3 tries. I kind of put out a challenge to the universe. I'll give it 3 tries. If there is a being who really wants to come through me with humor.
Oh.
And if there are lessons I will learn no other way. 3 tries. Wow. 3 tries. Give it your best shot. And on the 3rd try, I got pregnant. And I knew... I knew I would have a boy.
You did? How?
I did. Because if there were lessons, I would learn no other way.
Oh.
It wasn't that I was, you know, hugely separatist or anything. However, life at that time was pretty structured around the women's music festivals and taking my art. And, you know, that I just knew... Okay, there's more to learn.
I'm just, beautiful story, but I'm just noticing Dakota and Corey kind of chuckling here and there as you tell the story. So I'm just want to check in with Corey and see what, how did that sound listening to your mom? What?
It makes me laugh because my other mom is so very assertive and very much a go-getter, and she always kind of gets what she wants. So it makes me laugh how it's totally my other mom's personality to be like, you do this, and then to have Judah say, no, you can do it, and then my other mom be like, okay, I will, and then just to make it happen. And like my other mom, I think her whole life she really wanted a family, and kids were so important to her. And I'm just really grateful that they found each other because that's how we got here. So.
Oh, heartwarming.
What about you, Dakota? You were chuckling as well. What was that like for you to hear your mom talk like that about the lessons, and she knew she was going to have a boy? And
I think it really just fits how she raised us. And I mean, I really hope that I did teach her lessons, and she definitely is a different person than it sounds like she was before she had us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to know that we had a positive impact on her life.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't really know what it's like to live with a man. I lived with my dad, but my dad was pretty much gone all the time. I had 3 sisters. So I think it's really great, Judith, that you knew you were going to have a boy because you knew you needed lessons or needed to learn lessons about men in general, I guess. And I'm sure, Dakota, you're a beautiful man knowing that your mom is right here and what a beautiful person she is. And it gives me hope, you know, it makes me feel great.
I don't know what it's like to live with a man either.
It's all women in our family.
All women.
Well, lucky you.
I know.
Were your arms twisted to come here?
A little bit. A little bit. Uh-huh. She asked me in front of my girlfriend, and then my girlfriend pushed me to come here a little bit.
Which maybe Judith knew.
I think she did it on purpose.
Right. Well, on. But thank you, girlfriend.
Yeah. What's your girlfriend's name?
Katie.
Hey, Katie. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Katie.
It's good to push our edges a little bit, so we're happy to have you with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's
talk about, I'm curious to having two moms. And what was it like to have two moms in school? Because we're foster parents and we're two moms and we've had kids lots and it was difficult for a lot of kids. So I'm just curious, but they are foster kids too, but I'm just curious. Corey, you going to share?
Yeah. So growing up, I think it was really difficult. And when I was younger, there wasn't as much talk of diversity. We grew up in a really, I think, more liberal area in Forestville, California. So people were accepting, but it wasn't talked about in school. There was no education or no books or nothing like that that were accepting of same-sex couples. It was mostly the idea that there was a man and a woman. And I think that was hard growing up. And I think as a kid, I kind of went through my own coming out process. Because when you're a child and someone asks, like, how's your mom and how's your dad? And you have lesbian moms, you have to kind of ask yourself, do I tell them in the conversation, no, I don't have a dad, I have two moms? Or do you just say, oh, they're good, and then kind of go throughout your day? And I remember being younger and kind of having this fear of, it sounds like irrational, but I remember having a fear of, like, will a guy kind of accept me or want to be with me? And, like, because I knew my whole life that my mom would be the one walking me down the aisle. Mm-hmm. And so as a young kid, my whole thing was, like, I need to find a man who really loves me and loves my family, because I love my parents so much. And I think it was hurtful during certain parts of my life where people who were maybe religious would talk about lesbians being sinners and that kind of thing. And as a child, they didn't know that I had lesbian parents. And I think that was really difficult for me, because I look at it like, I love my parents so much, and no matter who they love, they should never be judged for that. Like, we should be allowed to love whoever we want. So I kind of went through my own coming out process. And as I got older, that belief of mine that, you know, I love my parents so much, no matter who they love, got stronger and stronger. And it reached a point where, you know, in every conversation, I'd be like, oh, actually, I have two moms. Do you want to hear my story? Mm. And I'm so proud of them. And I think it was hard growing up. And my hope is that throughout schools, there is more materials and conversation about different types of families, and acceptance of that. Because there isn't, you know, there's like Mother's Day and Father's Day, and people make Father's Day cards, and there should be a, you know, Mom's Day on Father's Day too. You know, make a card for your other mom on Father's Day or something like that. Just more acceptance. It's really important, because I think it does have a negative effect on children who almost feel like they're not accepted because they have lesbian parents if lesbian parents aren't accepted. So I think the goal is to have the idea that all families are accepted so that every human being feels that.
Mm. Thank you so much for that, Corey. Yeah. Beautiful. We got to put her on the podium, you know, to speak to the people. Beautiful. And so you want to say something?
I just wanted to ask you, Corey, just for clarification, because you went from, do I hide and say, oh, yeah, my mom and dad are fine. You went from that being unsure of how to say, you know, how to come out to people, to, well, actually, I have two moms. Do you want to hear my story? I'm curious. That's quite a shift. And as you grew stronger, you got more and more secure with that, you know, do you want to hear my story? So is there a point where you decided that you're going to start being authentic and tell people or ask people if they want to hear your story? Can you remember the shift happening?
I can just remember that in like sixth grade and under, I was really insecure about it and I had fear around it and I felt unsure. But as I got older in like seventh and eighth grade and going into high school, I think I formed more of my own identity and I had more confidence in myself. Mm. And that really helped. So I don't exactly remember a specific shift. Maybe there was some time period where I felt more anger. Like when I was 16 and I had a specific experience where someone was calling lesbian people sinners for being with women, and that really made me angry. And I think just maybe some healthy anger of like, this isn't okay. This is BS that people are treated this way, and I'm going to be there for people who, you know, are suffering or feel like the minority. And I think that's what made me want to do therapy, was like feeling different at a young age because I had lesbian parents. So it was like, I want to help people. I want to be there for people, you know, who do feel different or don't feel accepted. And I think that's so important. So that's kind of where my passion for being there for people came from, I think.
Thank you. And what about you, Dakota? How was that for you as far as being, you know, a boy growing up with two moms and a sister? And how was that for you in school?
Well, it was kind of a similar experience as Corey. And it's a unique experience because every time someone asks how your mom and dad are doing, you have to make a decision. Do I tell them or just go on saying, no, they're great? But I think when I was younger, I was more open to saying I had two moms. And then I think around sixth grade, I don't know if like kids, their parents' political affiliations or opinions start rubbing off on their kids more. And you start to notice that people don't think it's normal. And then I think it was around then that I started to censor myself, like sometimes, and maybe not just not bring it up and not be as open about it. And over the years, and that probably dragged into high school too, and then over the years, I become more open about it. I think I just don't, you know, you just have to let people think what they're going to think and accept that. And if they don't accept your story or your family, then that's, you know, that's their problem. Maybe you can change that about them, but I think it was great. Our parents did a good job. Both our moms growing up with two moms was a great experience, and I think they did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Beautiful. What a compliment, huh? So, Judith, how are you feeling about what you're listening? I mean, were you aware of your Corey's and Dakota's experience in school? I mean,
I've been more aware of Corey's experience. She's always very verbal and willing to talk. And I often have the experience, sometimes I like to go to parties where my young people are and sort of stand near other people asking them questions so that I hear things. And that's, so I kind of knew that Dakota had some stuff, but when I've asked, I think he's been real protective and not said, you know, not, he didn't bring it home.
So how are you feeling right now listening to him?
Oh, I love him so much. I was closing my eyes and listening to your voice and just feeling so proud of this young man and, yeah, who he is and how he's managed his life, which has also been part of my approach to parenting, has been as much as I can to put the least amount of it has to be a certain way, which then creates the space that's absent of as much resistance and resisting the agenda from the other side. And so, like, on the, you know, on the one hand, that creates very, you know, young people who are young adults who are able to function in the world. And then also, on the other hand, it means I can't really push to say, no, you have to tell me.
Mm-hmm. Boy, when I'm listening to you, Judith, I'm just thinking to myself, this is a radical woman. I mean, radical in the sense that you don't want it to be one way. Most parents say it's my way or the highway.
That was our other mom. Yeah. Oh. We needed a mixture of both.
Well, we will learn more about that.
Yeah. But I think this is a good time for a music break, and we'll get back to your other mom and the rest of your lives. Well, part of the rest of your lives. Anyway, we do need to take a music break. And Judith, you brought a song. You said you were a handpan player. So could you tell us about the music that you're going to share with folks tonight?
I'd love to. So I came up with this melody that I really liked. And I kept thinking there was a song to it, and maybe my cousin, who is a lyricist, would write it, but it was taking too long. And one afternoon I thought, maybe I have the words. And it was when Dakota was about to head off to Humboldt State, so moving out. And the whole song came in like under an hour.
Wow. Could you, you know, sometimes when people hear music in the very first time, they don't really get the words. Could you just give us a couple lines that come to the top of your mind right now about that are in the song?
Yeah. I'd always known that when you'd up and grown, you would take to the sky and on wings you would fly away. And one of the last, I know you're not going to be able to play the song all the way to the end, but the last line has to do with, still we would never try, though it would cross our minds, to trip them up so as not to be left behind. And our lives are cyclical, and the very last line is, and if it were not so, we might all be bored to tears.
Wow. What's the name of the song?
I'd Always Known.
I'd Always Known. Enjoy. Welcome back. If you just joined us, this is Living Proof, and we are in studio with Judith Lerner and her children, Corey and Dakota. And we've been talking about Corey and Dakota's lives as kids growing up with two moms, and we'd like to continue that conversation. Let's talk about the donor, Judith. You told me before you came on the show that both of your kids have the same donor, but that you and Rhonda both birthed these children. So can you tell us a little bit about how that came to be?
How much of the story would you like?
Well, we have some time.
So when Rhonda said, okay, we were actually in a group of lesbians who were all talking about having children. And so the whole conversation was live donors, frozen, fresh, Where do you get it? And so Rhonda would actually say, if you ask that person, I'll take you to breakfast. So there was a period of time where I was walking up to guys at on the street in at music gatherings and saying, excuse me, have you ever thought about being a donor? And they would look at me and go, a what? It's, you know, sperm donor. And for the most part, they would, you know, like, oh, I could never do that. Or, you know, thank you for the compliment, but no, thank you. So we ended up in the doctor's office who was assisting a woman. And we were looking at the list of donors that she had gotten from Humboldt State. And reading the different things that they said on the forms. And then there was a knock on the door, and the doctor said, yeah, and the phlebotomist stuck his head in the door and said, is there anything you need? So after he left, Rhonda said, what about him? And so the doctor said, okay, but we were doing anonymous donor, possible to be known at 18. And so she said, okay, so it'll either be donor number 276 or whatever the form was, or it'll be him, but I'm not going to tell you.
Oh.
So we didn't know who it was. And when Corey was born, Rhonda went back to work. I was at home. I was walking around the neighborhood looking for the other mothers, because staying home with diapers and was not my idea of... yeah, so I found this group of women, you know, who were also, who had young babies, and they would say, oh, she's very light. Corey was a towhead.
What is that?
Oh, she was very pale complected and white hair, and I'm more olive complected. And so they were like, she doesn't look like you. And it's like, oh, well, yeah, she's, you know, I didn't birth her. My partner birthed her. We used a donor, blah, blah, blah. And one of the people at one of the women in the group said, oh, my neighbor donated for some lesbians a little while back, you know, right about the same time. So it turned out that we were on a cul-de-sac and he was at the end of the street.
Oh.
And when Corey was about 9 months old, I was had a craft booth in the middle of town, in the square in town, and this man walked into the booth, came over, introduced himself, said, hello, my name is Mark, just want you to know, I will never take your baby. Which was exactly what I needed to hear, because having not birthed her, that was a possibility. And so over time, we knew, you know, so we had known that he knew, but we didn't know if he knew that we knew that he knew that we knew.
How did he know? I'm curious.
Probably because the neighbor who had the baby talked to him. Oh, and he also knew because I think the doctor gave him a picture of Corey with a dog, and he would see me walking by with Corey and the dog.
Oh my God.
Small town.
So small town. Yes.
Small town.
Yes.
So when Corey was about, I don't know, 2 and a half, we were going up to see Rhonda's parents. And Corey started singing this song in the car. We're going to see your dad. We're going to see your dad and my dad's dead. And Rhonda got really flipped out about it and said, oh, we have to tell her. We can't let her think that she has a dead dad. So because it was donor known at 18, so we have to check. And by this time, he had been coming over once in a while and visiting. And so I sat down with Corey at 2 and a half when she's in the bathtub having this conversation about how babies are born and There's eggs from the mother and there's sperm from, and we don't have it, so we have a donor and you have a donor. And she's like, well, who is it?
2.5?
Yeah.
Wow. She...
Yes. So I told her who it was, and she said, oh, why wasn't it Mac, which was the dad of a friend of hers. So.
So.
Oh, and then a few years later, we, when it was my turn, we asked again, and he said, yeah, for sure. So he donated a second time for Dakota.
So is he still in your lives?
Yes. Well, say.
Yeah, so he actually lives up in Humboldt County, and we've seen him periodically throughout our lives. Last time I saw him was probably about a year ago. And I mean, it's not like a fatherly relationship. It's more like a friend. And yeah, I think he's been pretty hands off, and yeah.
Did he have his own family? I'm just curious about the donor.
He didn't. He is a beekeeper.
Oh, yeah.
And part of his thought initially in saying yes was a curiosity about what would come from him, and really not wanting to be a dad, you know, not wanting to be a father.
And I think part of it was, this is Corey, my parents really wanted us to know that he had this role of a donor, that he wasn't the father figure, so that there wasn't feelings of confusion or expectations. And I think the backstory was that he had his own father leave the family at a young age, and he didn't want us to feel abandoned or not supported by him. So he wanted it to be very clear, like, what the role was for us. And then, you know, our parents tried to really explain that to us. And then, you know, they gave us so much support. And then we actually grew up being a big part of the lesbian community with lots of aunties and lots of women in our lives. And that was really great.
Mm.
So the both of you had no desire to, like, oh, I want to meet my dad or my donor and be in his life. You didn't have that urge or that.
We did. We talked to him when we go up to Humboldt County. We usually give him a call and say, do you want to meet up? And I've talked to him on the phone and had a few, like, hour, 2 hour long conversations. He's a really interesting guy. But it never really reached further than that.
Yeah, I think the way that our moms explained it to us, describing him as a donor and not like a father, I always felt like my moms were my parents. So I never felt like I needed a dad, and he was always just the donor, you know?
Okay, so I'm really curious to know more about Rhonda parenting style or personality. Corey, you jumped up, so go ahead.
So our mom, Rhonda, is very much like a butch lesbian. She's very masculine. You see her, or like people see her, and they address her as sir. She's very tall. She's like 6 foot. So she raised us very much like very active. Like I remember being a tomboy and like painting the house, trimming the trees. We'd go kayaking. We'd go on road trips. We'd go camping. We grew up in the country. It was really fun. So it was a great mixture of like our mom, Rhonda, was also very hardworking and taught us a lot of values around, you know, you can do whatever you want to as long as you work hard for it. And that was a great combination with Judith, who was very much like artistic and unconditionally loving and was just like, you can do whatever your heart desires. And Rhonda was like, you need to achieve things and this is good. So it was a great mix. Mm.
It sounds like polar opposites.
They are.
Definitely.
And it's, you know, very, it sounds like a balanced way of growing up in the world, because you got Judith's kind of artistic and unconditional, I'm here for lessons, what can I learn from you both? And then you have Rhonda, who it sounds like, you know, it's like, okay, you got to do this and this and this, and kind of she cracked the whip a little bit. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's definitely correct. Rhonda's definitely the more, I'd say more strict when we were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a vision for what she wanted us to do. I feel like she wanted to put us on a path, whereas Judith was more like, just go with the flow, do whatever you want, you know, just be happy. And so, yeah, it was a good mix of parenting styles.
This kind of reminds me of me and Diana with our kids, our foster kids. You know, I'm pretty much more kind of go with the flow.
I guess they can figure that out.
Yeah. Well, I'm a musician too. And so I think maybe that's why. I don't know. So anyway, in the beginning, we said that you set precedent in this county, Del Norte County in California, about same-sex adopting. Could you tell us a little bit about that, Judith?
Yeah, so starting in 1994, I think, we started the process with a lawyer to cross-adopt. And initially what that means is usually to adopt, you know, for adoptions, you have to sign up, any birth parent has to sign off. Or in the case of, you know, a straight couple that's adopting, the second parent has to sign off. So in our case, because the donor wasn't part of it officially, he had no thing, but it still came down to a year and a half of filling out forms, having interviews, and the lawyer saying, so you're going to fill this out, we're going to submit it, they're going to say no, we're going to fill out some more papers, there'll be some more site visits, people will come and interview you, you'll have to get letters from other people, and we'll submit all that, and they'll say no. And then we'll fill out some more things, and then we'll submit it, and they'll say no. And eventually, you'll go before a judge, and it'll be up to the judge. And so we did that. And in, I think it was 1995, we went up, took Corey and Dakota up, sat before a judge up in Del Norte County, which is just before the Oregon border. And he asked some questions, and he looked at the papers, and he signed off. So we are now both parent to the one to the one that we birthed, and adopted step parent to the other, official.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that sounds like it was quite an uphill road to go. But it sounds like your lawyer helped you through it, as far as they're going to say no, and you just kind of went with the. You didn't have those expectations that right away they would sign off on it.
Yeah, so no, we knew that it was going to take a while, and this was kind of at the. It wasn't being done, and it was also on the heels of a lot of issues that were coming up for lesbians having children together and having one, you know, the birth mother take the child and leave, or a donor's parents getting involved in realizing at some point that this was the only grandchild they were going to have, and going to court and winning custody rights. So the idea of doing something legal was important.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And the kids didn't have to speak. How old were you two when you went to court with your mom? You were
I must have been three if it was 1995.
Okay. I didn't do the math, so yeah.
And Corey was six. It was kind of shortly before we split up.
Do you want to say anything about that, or like how did that affect your family to have both moms who the kids grew up with, to have you now living in separate homes and then you still co-parented? How did that go?
Well, for me, it's kind of just how it's always been. Corey probably remembers them being together more than I do, so I only remember them not being together. So it was kind of just how it was, and it worked out well. They both lived pretty close together, so we just split the week between each house. And, yeah, so it didn't have...
And that was okay for you to go back and forth? How was that for you to... move around like that? I know they were
kind
close,
of a hassle sometimes, because I mean, you get used to being at one house, or and each like parenting style is different. So maybe As a kid, I definitely liked Judith's house more because she was more like less strict, less chores.
That's surprising.
Yeah. But yeah, it worked out well.
Mm-hmm. Corey?
Yeah, I think it was initially difficult because I was used to having both parents' support at the time, like whenever I needed support. So I think that was hard at first, but I remember feeling like ultimately I just wanted my parents to be happy, and if they were going to be happy or separated, then that made sense. And it was, I mean, we were really lucky, I think, because we grew up in a small town where you literally just drive down one road and up another road, and there was our high school, and then you dive down one road, and then there was our other parents' house. So it was literally like a little grid. Like you could walk to each of our parents' house in the school. So that made it really easy. And I think our, like, the most amazing thing was our parents, they had such a strong commitment to being wonderful co-parents that they never let their relationship impact us. Like, we never felt like we were in the middle of them. They never argued. To this day, we have all of our holidays together as a family with both of our moms, and they never argue. And so I just feel really blessed for that. Like, they really did what they intended to do in terms of parenting us, and that was so important to them. And so I feel like, you know, we've turned out really well because of that too.
That's really rare for a family to have the parents who have separated to spend holidays together and don't argue in front of kids and don't have the kids try to make, you know, choices and decisions. And, you know, what do parents do, Di?
Split.
Yeah, exactly.
Split. Yeah. Split. I'm working with families now. It's and I mean, they're straight families, but still, that's, I mean, I love the way you talked about that, Corey, because that's difficult. It's difficult for not to split, not put the kids in the middle of the relationship. So how are you so successful with that, Judith?
That's a great question. So the main thing for me was that Corey and Dakota, they traveled together. And it was always in my mind that being literally half siblings, you know, being siblings, being biologically half siblings, that they were a unit. And that I felt good that they had each other. And I have this saying about it's important to take my foot off the gas when it's not my car. And even though I didn't have the saying at the time when we first split, I think that's always been part of my character, is if I can't change it, don't push it. There's one funny story, though. At one point, Rhonda asked me, what did I do to get, how did I deal with Dakota taking showers? Like, what did I do to make him take a shower? And I was surprised, like, what do you mean get him to take showers? We have him on a timer. So he had a cow that had a 15-minute timer, and it was like, this is how long you can be in the shower. This is how long you can be in the bath. And, like, you could two times a day, but, you know, 15 minutes.
So that question to me means that Rhonda had a hard time getting Dakota to take a shower. So then did you ask her? I mean, what was the challenge there?
Well, I had one thought, but then Dakota told me something else.
I think there was a – well, Rhonda had TV at her house and like more video games, I'd say. Mm. And we didn't have video games or TV or cable at Judith's house. So I would rather watch TV than take a shower. But at her house, it was – taking a shower was like the thing to do.
Even two a day.
Just boredom, maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And Corey.
And the funny thing about me is Rhonda will say I take too many showers. She only wants me to take one, but I like taking a bath at night and a shower in the morning. And she'd be like, you take too many showers. You can only take one shower. And then for Dakota, I'd be like, you're not taking enough showers.
So, Judith, how did you not fight?
At least in front of the kids, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, not living together made it really easy not to. And so pretty much the most of the conversations were about timing. and we didn't really get into what was happening in one house or what was happening in the other house. So I know what was really great was the period of time where I was able to take over covering them, having them covered on my health care at a time when Rhonda, who's traditionally been employed in, you know, really great jobs with full coverage and stuff, there was a period where she wasn't, and I was able to take over and put them on health care.
Right.
Yeah, put them on my health plan. So that was a turning point in terms of really balancing things out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there really wasn't anything to argue about.
Yeah, if there was any animosity between them, we never got that impression. They were completely civil when they were around us, which in retrospect is not how most divorces have gone, hearing it from my friends. So that was really great of them to be so hospitable towards each other.
Mm-hmm. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I remember at some point, being really proud that we managed the co-parenting and all of that with no
conflict?
What? Well, yeah, no mediation.
Oh.
Yeah. We just worked out schedules and worked out, you know, I want them for an extra amount of time, and which holiday do you want? And, yeah.
Mm. It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, and the kids are so well adjusted to that. You know, the moving back and forth and okay with parents separating. They were okay with that, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm. Earlier we talked about splitting on your part, you know, you as a parent and Rhonda as a parent. But I'm wondering if Corey and Dakota, if they ever tried to split you and Rhonda, like tell you one thing and then tell her one thing and, you know, kind of try to manipulate the situation. Are you aware of anything like that?
I don't think I did that.
Because, I mean, that's great. I mean, if you didn't, because you probably knew exactly where you fit in your family and where your moms fit. And it doesn't sound like there was any of that strife that people go through in families that split up like that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's pretty conflict-free. And it was just our schedule, Sunday through Wednesday and Wednesday through Saturday, every week.
So how are you, Dakota, now in your relationship with conflict? Did they teach you how to be in conflict
or deal low, with conflict? I'm pretty low conflict.
Low, okay. You like mom?
Yeah,
mom?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, but I think just talking it over is a good way to deal with conflict and not getting too – I try not to get too elevated and yell and scream and just be rational. And talk it out, get both sides of the story, and, you know, kind of put yourself in the other person's shoes.
Wow. Ooh. That's some words of wisdom right there. Those are great words of wisdom.
You've done your job, Mama.
Yes.
Wonderful.
I am quelling.
What does that mean for people who don't understand Yiddish?
It's like when your chest pops, just puffs up and you want to bounce your fingers off your clavicles and just go, I'm so proud.
That's wonderful. Well, speaking of words of wisdom, we are running out of time for our show, and there's so much more that I wish we could ask you. Do you have a website that if people want to hear more music or find out more about you that they could go to?
Yes, I do. It's dreammakermuse.com. So dreammakermuse.com.
Wonderful. So visit that site if you want to learn more about Judith and her hand pan and her quilting and other things that she does in her life. But we do have to ask you, Judith, for your words of wisdom. What would you like the audience to know from all of what we talked about today?
Well, the thing about take your foot off the gas when it's not your car has been really useful. Because there are times when I think, oh, I really wish they wouldn't do anybody. I mean, your young people, as well as anybody else in your life, I really wish they wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. And then realize, oh, yeah, I wouldn't do that. But it's not my car. So take my foot off the gas.
I like that. I've never heard that before. And I liked it when you said it first and I wrote it down because I'm going to use that too and tell other people about it.
Yeah, it's been useful. Mm. And that I don't, oh, and then another piece is I don't have to be wrong for the other person to be right. Mm-hmm. And the other person doesn't have to be wrong for me to be right because there really are different perspectives, literally and figuratively, what, you know, the way one person interprets things or sees things or what they make out of things from their own life experience is really different. And it smooths a lot of bumps if you don't have to be, nobody has to be right or for the other person to be, nobody has to be wrong.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. We really want to thank you for bringing your family in, Judith, and Corey and Dakota. What a great interview. I feel really moved, and I just love listening to you.
Thank you so much for being here, everybody.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Remember, like Judith and her children, Dakota and Corey, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can support others in being free and living their lives authentically. It's another way to help the world. Like them, you too can be visible and vibrant in telling your story. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then,
good night.
Our lives are cyclical and quite relational.
Next Sunday night to Outbeat Music. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB FM Radio 91. As the season for giving gets underway, KRCB Radio is asking for your help to keep programs like Outbeat Radio coming to you every Sunday night. Our winter fundraiser begins on December 8th and continues through the 15th. Your fully tax-deductible donation will help pay for services like our mobile app, which you can download for free and listen to KRCB Radio from anywhere in the world with internet access. Donations can be made now or anytime online by going to donate.krcb.org. Just click the Donate to Radio button. Listen on the air, online, or on the go. We are Radio 91, 91.1 KRCB FM Windsor, and 90.9 K215 CQ Santa Rosa. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. Afropop is next.